Okay, good morning. This morning's shiur, we're going to be speaking about Parshas Bahalosha, doing some interesting things, I hope. I hope you find it interesting. We're going to begin with the beginning of this week's Parsha. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el Aharon, you should speak to Aharon, v'yamarta elav, and you should say to him, Bahalosecha es haneros al mul pnei haminorah ya'iru shivas haneros. Which means, when you light the lamps towards the face of the menorah, you will light, there will be lit seven lights, and they will give forth light. So the question really is, what is the reason for this type of explanation in terms of what happens? Obviously, Bahalos Chasaneros, when you light the lamps, when you light the actual candles themselves, they're clearly going to give off light. So this particular pasuk and this whole concept of the menorah is a lot of fuel for much discussion about the holiness of the menorah, and certainly on Hanukkah, the menorah itself, talking about the or, and the idea that the lights of the menorah bring down a certain amount of kedusha from on high. It's really connected to the or Ein Sof, to the infinite light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I want to talk more pashup shat here. What is the reason why the Torah needed to explain that these Shivas Haneros will give off light? Clearly that is what happens. What are we talking about here? So this morning I had the great zechus of davening at a Neitz Minyan for one of our students' bar mitzvah, and I was asked to give a little bit of a shtickle Torah afterwards. So I did, really b'siyata d'shmaya, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me a great insight into something, and I want to share it with you, and I think it will help to answer the question that I just asked. So when males put tefillin on, after we make the shel, we make the bracha for the shel rosh, and we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchusel Yolam Va'ed, we say the following, Umechamascha El Elyon, and your wisdom, God, from on high, Tatzil Alai, you should imbue within me, Umibinascha Tivineni, and your Bina, your understanding, I should get that understanding. So the question that I had asked was, what's the difference between Chachma and Bina? Umechamascha El Elyon, Tatzil Alai, give me your wisdom, Umibinascha Tivineni, and your understanding. It's the same thing. Bina, Chachma, when we say Nusach Sard, when they daven, Shmona Esrei, Atachonin Ladam Da'as, Nadamel Shmonachonin Meitchad, they have Chachma Bina V'das, I think they say. They use the words Chachma Bina Das. Chachma Bina Das. Chabad. Chabad is Chachma Bina Das. It's all the same thing, really. It's all a certain level of understanding. So what's the reason why we say both? So I had explained that the reason why we say both is because Chachma and Bina are really two different things. Chachma is a level of understanding that's a very peripheral understanding. It's an understanding that we get from our parents, our surroundings. We know the right thing to do because that's what we were taught. We know to say please and thank you because our parents taught us to say please and thank you, because when we see other people saying please and thank you, we see that that's the appropriate way of behaving. Bina is different. Bina is a deeper level of understanding. It's an understanding that comes from one's own self, that a person's uniqueness and individual disposition allows them to understand certain things about what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. Meaning there are certain children that you don't need to tell how to act. You can model for them appropriate behavior. We speak about that all the time. But certain children just have an innate understanding. Certain people just have an innate understanding of what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. A certain level of maturity, it's a certain level of being able to take in things and process it, and then fit it to their own person type. But so that idea of Chachma and Bina being different is an important one. It's an important distinction. But what's interesting to note is at the end of this little paragraph, we say v'shemen hatov tarik al shiva kinei haminora lahashpia tuvcha levriosecha, and the oil, this fine oil that's put into each one of these flasks of seven from the menorah, so it's done so to radiate goodness to all of your creations. It's interesting that it uses the concept of menorah here in this paragraph. And I think that's the answer to our previous question. Why is it talking about light here? Why is it talking about, obviously we know that when the menorah is lit, it's going to give off light. So why the need to say, I know it's going to give off light. Why are you telling me that? Because the light that it's giving off is not, obviously, I don't need to tell you that it's going to give off light, but I do need to tell you that that light is not just physical, that light is a spiritual light, that light is a light of understanding, it's a light of connection, it's a light of bina, it's a light of taking God and becoming close to God. It's a light where I don't just understand things peripherally, but I understand things on the deepest level. The level that allows me to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that, I think, is the reason why we have it. And that's the important distinction between the Chachma and the Bina. That the Chachma we get from people, the Bina is part of us, but it comes from the Hashpa. It comes from the Hashpa of the light of the menorah. And that was the idea. And perhaps that's the reason why Aharon HaKohen was given that charge. Because who is Aharon HaKohen? Aharon HaKohen was an Oev Shalom Rodev Shalom. Aharon HaKohen was an individual who ran after people to make peace. That's who he was. He wasn't taught that, being a slave. He didn't know that intuitively. Yeah, I mean, he didn't know that just from looking around. Lehefech. Looking around, he saw a caste system. Looking around, he saw people who were being treated poorly. He knew it from himself. He knew it because that's who he was. That's what made him special. That was his connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Aharon HaKohen, who understood on a deep level what is right and what is wrong, who understood on a deep level what it means to have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Aharon HaKohen, that was the individual who was charged with the very holy task of lighting the lights of the menorah that would be mashpia on other people and give them bina, and give them a deep sense of understanding. Give them that sense of understanding that would further allow them to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's correct. Well, we had said last week, exactly, the Pesachim Rebbe was talking about the fact that the reason why Aharon HaKohen was given the charge of giving the brachas of Yivrach Hashem Yishmech, Yashem Panav Elecha V'Yichunaka, Yisrach Hashem Panav Elecha V'Yasemecha Shalom, and not, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end says, like, I need you to do that for me. Why? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need Aharon to do it? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it to just be in the luft. He didn't want it to just be like this intangible type of bracha, but that it should go through a human mouthpiece. It should go through the mouthpiece of Aharon HaKohen. Aharon HaKohen, who was so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but yet in this world also. It was almost as if Aharon HaKohen was Sula Mutzav Arza, V'Rosha Yigiyah Shamayimah. That Aharon HaKohen was in this world, but he was also in the other world as well. And that, I think, is the reason why Aharon HaKohen was given that charge, and that's really the importance of the lights of the menorah. Okay. I'd like to focus on something else. So here's a very interesting situation. So in this week's Parsha Ba'aloscha, we speak about Pesach Sheni. Okay? Pesach Sheni was the opportunity that was given to Jews who are Tamei, or who are unable to make it to Yerushalayim, and they would give the Karban Pesach, they would do the Karban Pesach, perform the Karban Pesach, so that they could be Mekayim the Mitzvah of doing the Karban Pesach, and it gives them a second chance to be able to do it. So here's what happens. There were individuals who were tamei. They themselves were tamei because they had touched a dead body. What body did they touch? There are mefarshim that discuss the fact that they were really touching the Atzmos Yosef. When they were bringing the bones of Yosef HaTzadik out, they were tamei because they had touched him, and they still wanted to be makir of the karban. So what do? So. They couldn't bring the carpet, and they couldn't bring the carpet Pesach by Kriyu Lifnei Hashem, Lifnei Moshe, Lifnei Aaron, by Yomahu, and they came before Moshe and Aaron, and they said, by Yomru, Hanashim Ha'emai Lav, Anachlu Tmeim L'Nefesh Adam, Lama Nigara Levilti Hikriv, Hakriv Es Karban Hashem B'Mo'ado, B'Sof B'nei Yisrael. Why shouldn't we be able to bring the carbon? Why shouldn't we be able to do that? By Yomru Aleya Moshe, Imdu, stay right here, Moshe said. Let me find out what Hashem wants to tell. Let me find out what Hashem wants you guys to do. So, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Hashem spoke to Moshe, and this is what you should do. So on and so forth. And he gives Moshe Rabbeinu the specific rules to work with. So the question that I have, I guess, is somewhat, I guess, simple, but it really stands out if you look at the flow. Everything is written in the Torah for a purpose that we know. Everything is written in the Torah for a purpose. Every line in the Torah has a purpose. Every single dot, everything has a purpose, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant it to be. So what are we learning from Moshe saying to them, I don't know, right? If the purpose of this conversation is for us to learn the halachos of Pesach Sheni, which it is, so give me the thing, tell me the situation. The situation was, wait, they touched somebody, they were tamei, and they couldn't bring the carbon Pesach, and they wanted to bring it again. And then start. So on and so forth. This is what you should do if you become Tamei. What do I need to know that Moshe tells them? Stay right there. Don't move. Imdu. Stay. Don't go. And I'll find out what Hashem wants. So I think that the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this become part of the actual Torah Shebiksav is because, number one, it showed something important about Moshe. And number two, it's an important lesson for anybody, parent, teacher, any individual. Moshe Rabbeinu was leading a fairly new group of people, a new nation of people. And it was new. And Moshe Rabbeinu was a leader. But he was a leader par excellence. He was the paradigm of leadership, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Was he the paradigmatic leader because of his strength to be able to command respect? Maybe. But I'd like to argue that what made him... Excuse me?
His anivus,
100%. His humility, that's definitely true. And that fits into this. But leadership doesn't mean perfection. You don't need to be perfect to be a leader. You need to be honest. You need to be straightforward. That's what real leadership is. Leadership is not just saying, this is what we're doing, because I said this is what we're doing. It's also being able to take a step back and think about things globally, to be able to listen to other pieces of information and make a good judgment call, and if things need to be tweaked, to tweak them. It also means being able to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer. And that's what Moshe did. And so the Torah felt it was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt it was important to put into the Torah that Moshe's godless as a leader, Moshe's greatness as a leader, wasn't just everything that we know about in terms of his strength, his ability to command respect, his ability to show people truth, his ability to intercede on behalf of his people, but also his ability to say, I don't know, when he didn't know. And that's why it was included here. And that's why it's so important. Because anybody who has followers is a leader. Parents are leaders. Parents are leaders just like any big leader is a leader. Parents are leaders of their children. And very often, the automatic response to a child's question is an answer. But the message of Moshe is you don't necessarily need to have an answer. That it's okay to tell a child, I don't know, I need to think about it for a minute. I'm not sure what the answer is. Let me find out. It also gives a great opportunity to parents and children to be able to sit together and learn certain things. Mom, why is X, Y, and Z? Dad, why is X, Y, and Z? I don't know. You know, that's a great question. Let's sit down, let's open up a book together, and let's learn it together. And that is so important. It's so, so important. By the way, we see this other piece of Moshe Rabbeinu looking for advice and actually taking that advice. We see it in Parshas Yisro when Moshe is setting up a court system and he's just completely inundated by questions and he just can't do it all. And his father-in-law comes to him and gives him an idea. He'll set up like appellate courts and like bigger courts and supreme courts. And then the ones that you can't do, so you'll, the ones that everybody else can't do, you'll decide those. Right, he delegated the responsibility. But that idea came from Yisra. It came from totally out of the fold of anything. It came from Midjan. What shaychus does Midjan have with the Jewish people? So the answer is that Moshe Rabbeinu, his leadership was so strong that he was willing to listen to ideas from all around. He was able to take those ideas and inculcate them into his way of working with his people. And he took the idea and he worked with it. But here too, here's this example, is a perfect example, where Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the answer. Should he have known the answer? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. He knew that people were tamei. That's not my place to say if he should have known it or shouldn't have known it. But it is my place to say, let's take a look at this and let's see what happened. Why are we learning about this? We're clearly being taught an important message. And I think that message is very, very important. It's a message about leadership in general. It's a message about parenting in general. And that, I think, parents don't always realize that they are leaders. And they are leaders. And when just as when a regular leader throws his hands up in the air and says, you know what, I can't do it anymore. So when parents throw their hands up in the air and say, I can't do it anymore, they're little soldiers, their children see a parent giving up. When a parent says, this is what we're doing, they see a strong leader. When a parent says, I don't know something, so children see a strong leader. And children, by the way, also see that it's okay not to know everything. And that's the last piece that's so important to know, to talk about. That children want to know everything. And it's not possible to know everything. And when children don't know things, it could be a very hard feeling. It could be a very hard situation for children not to have the answer for things. When parents model and say, I don't know the answer, we're teaching our children that we don't need to know. Oh, this is great. No, last time it happened also. I got so many comments. No, I thought for so long you were just talking to yourself. No, no, it's not true. There are people. When we model that type of behavior and we say that we don't know, children realize that it's okay not to know things. So by the way, I read a very interesting thing. Rav Volbe, who is just was an absolutely tremendous educator, really years beyond where he was chronologically, writes in a sefer called Zriya Ubinyan Bechinuch that it's very important for parents to bench moving their lips. Why? Because for little children. Because little children understand the importance of communication. They see communication and they see mouths opening and closing, and that's a communication. Communication is connection. And so he says that when you open up your mouth talking to Hashem, children see that communication with Hashem. They see that ability to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So children really do look. Children really do look towards us as models, as role models, and as leaders. Okay. Just to go to the next idea that I wanted to share with you. No, actually, I don't have anything from the PSS today, unfortunately. I apologize. But next week, please God, I will. Okay. So, one of the most famous situations that happened in the Midbar. Jewish people started to complain. They started to complain. They started to complain about the man. Started to complain about the man. Now we know the what did the man really taste like? So Pashut Pshat is the man tasted like a sweet cake, you know, like a sweet roll, you know, something sweet, honeyish, oily, delicious. That's what the man tasted like. The Drashim say that the man tasted like anything you wanted it to. So, you know, I always had the question that if it could taste like anything you wanted it to, so let it taste like meat, and then you wouldn't have the taiva for meat. Okay, put that on the side for a second. But I did, as I was looking through it, I was kind of like blown away by one particular thing. So what happens? So B'nai Yisrael, it's very frustrating, I'll be honest with you. You know, like when you give your child a present and they start crying that they didn't get a different present, and you're like, oh, I can't believe you're actually complaining that I didn't get you something else. Just say thank you for what I gave you. So what happens here? Chadosh Baruch Hu had just dealt with the misonanim, the people who were looking to complain about things, and Chadosh Baruch Hu basically like burned them and started to consume the edge of the machaneh, and everybody cried out, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped. And Moshe called out to Hashem, and he stopped. So, then what happened? What happened after that was more people started to complain, and they started to, like, get into people's minds and started to create the sensation of hunger, his avutava. They cultivated this craving. And what do the Jewish people do? It was like so frustrating to read. Vayashuvu, vayivku, gam b'nei Yisrael, vayomru miya achilenu basar. They actually started to cry. Vayivku, they started to cry about the fact that they didn't have meat. They're crying about the fact that they didn't have meat. You can understand how frustrating that is to read. They were just saved from the hands of the Mitzrim, from hundreds of years of slavery, and they started to cry. And then they started to cry more. Zacharnu es hadaga. We remember the fish that we used to eat in Mitzrayim for free. Hakishuim ves avatichim ves hechatzir ves habitzalim ves hashumin. We remember the leeks and the melons and the cucumbers and the onions and the garlic that we used to eat. And now, what do we have? Nafshenu yivesha, ein kol bilti el haman einenu. We only have the man. That's all we have to look forward to. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like really, really upset about this, as you can possibly understand. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, he says, get ready for tomorrow. You guys are going to be eating meat. You guys are going to be eating meat, not just for one day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days. You're going to be eating meat. Asher yetzei ma'apchem v'hayalachem lezara. You're going to be eating this until it comes out of your nose, until you become nauseous from it, until you can possibly say, who would dare cry about the fact that you didn't have meat. So it actually reminds me of a story that my grandmother used to tell me when my uncle one time tried smoking. So my grandmother said to him, you want to smoke? Okay. She locked him in a closet with a carton of cigarettes and wouldn't let him out until he smoked the entire thing. That is exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu did. I mean, you know, that's like old school discipline, you know? You want to eat this? You're going to eat it until you vomit. That's how much you get. That's what Hashem said. You want slav? You want meat? I'm going to give you meat. I'm not going to give it to you for one day or 2 days. I'm going to give it to you every single day until it's coming out of your nose. So what happens? Kadosh Baruch Hu sends it. And the Jewish people eat. So then here, listen to this. And this is the part that I have a little bit of an issue with, that I was struggling with. Habasar odenu ben shineihem. The meat was still in between their teeth. Terem yikareis. Va'af Hashem chara va'am. Va'yach Hashem ba'am. Maka rabba ma'od. So what happened? That the meat was still between their teeth. Terem yikareis. It wasn't even chewed yet. And Kadosh Baruch Hu's anger flared. And he struck a mighty blow against the Jewish people. And he killed a whole slew of Jewish people. And what happened? They named the place. Kivros Hatava. Kivros Hatava, the graves of desire, because it was over there that all these people who desired the quail so much died. So here's my question: why did Kadosh Baruch Hu kill them? The punishment was getting the slav. The punishment was that they were going to eat the slav, that they were going to eat so much that it was going to be coming out of their nose, that they were becoming nauseous from it. So why? I don't get why the Jewish people were punished above and beyond the punishment. The punishment was that they were going to get the slav so much that they would get sick of it. That was their punishment. So why did Kadosh Baruch Hu go beyond that? Why did he kill them? Killing them was never part of the deal. That's not what he said. But that's not what the Torah says. That's not what the Torah says. The Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'af Hashem Chara V'am. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, his wrath, flared against the people. Why? So number one, clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them a punishment. And the punishment was, you want to smoke? I'm locking you in your closet and you're going to have to smoke the entire carton of cigarettes before you come out. You want meat? I'm going to give you meat. I'm not going to give you for a day or two. I'm going to give you for days, for weeks, until it comes out of your nose. But then what was he expecting? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu expect from the Jewish people? Probably the same response that my grandmother expected from my uncle, which was, okay, I promise, I won't ever touch it again. I'm sorry. Did the Jewish people say that? No. They took the meat and they started to eat it. They totally missed the point. Kadosh Baruch Hu was punishing them. They missed it. They missed what Kadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach them. And once they didn't understand it anymore, they were totally lost. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you know what? You just don't get it. You don't get it. You don't deserve to be part of these people. These people are people that need to understand that every action has a reaction. But once you understand the reaction, so then learn from it and grow. But if you're going to take what I'm giving you, which is the punishment in and of itself, and you're not going to learn from it, so then there's no hope from you. Remember, the Jewish people at that point were being molded, they were being sculpted, they were being developed into a nation. Nationhood only works when people buy into it, when they understand the checks and balances. If the people themselves didn't buy into it or didn't understand the way in which God worked, which was that you do something, I'm going to punish you. When I punish you, you understand what you did was wrong. If they understand that, then fine. If they don't, then they can't be part of the people. That being said, I think that when it comes to general discipline with children, there is an inyan of Mida keneged mida, which is what we see over here with Kadosh Baruch Hu. You want meat, I'm going to give you meat. Mida keneged mida. And that's important. It's important for parents to clearly outline and articulate what the punishment is and why that child is getting punished. the response that we're looking for is for the child to recognize what they did, recognize where they erred, and for us to be able to bring the child back into understanding appropriateness, what is appropriate, what is inappropriate. That is the reason why I think it's very, very important that punishments in general, discipline in general, should not be b'shas kas. It shouldn't be at the time of anger. Ever, ever, ever. And children should never perceive it as being out of anger. Because it's not about anger. It's about teaching children the appropriate way of behaving. And the only time I could really, I would really condone a type of discipline out of, let's say, anger, but more of like a frustration, anxiety, nervousness, would be if, God forbid, a child walks across a busy intersection. So at that point, you would take the child's hand, you would slap them. They would need to know.
The child senses negativity.
Correct.
Something.
Correct.
So it may not be anger, but when you're disciplining your child and you're telling them, you know what, this is what you did, and this is what you're not going to do anymore
right.
because you did this.
Correct.
There is, it, you may not call it anger, but your child is not going to
yes.
get a positive
That's correct.
Energy from you.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, obviously, the best way to discipline is through positive reinforcement, not negative reinforcement. Negative reinforcement is reactionary. It's a reaction to a behavior.
When you're talking about the midah keneged midah,
right.
You painted all over the walls.
Right.
Now you need to clean the walls.
That's exactly right.
So they're not getting from your... I know the tone of my voice changes because it needs to.
Correct.
So... I don't like what you did. Now you need to clean what you did.
That's correct.
So they're getting some sort of not anger.
No, they're getting a vibe.
Right.
They're getting a negative vibe.
Right. 100%.
And that's okay. That's okay. But they will understand. Children will know the difference between a negative vibe. Oh, gosh, my mom is not happy
right.
with what I did. And my mom is angry with what I did.
Right.
I'm not angry that you're a child. I'm not angry that you did something that a child does. I'm disappointed because you know better. If this is something that we allow, then I would always let you write on the walls. The fact that you don't see writing all over the walls, you need to be able to... That's also, by the way...
So you're saying don't lose it.
Correct,
right.
correct. There's no point. There's no point to it. There's no point to it. There's no point to it.
Oh, 100%.
Well, that's for sure true. That's for sure true. Older kids is a whole different story, 100%. During adolescence, you do not want to push children away through anger at all. It's all about understanding. It's all about positive. It's all about giving room. At the same time, to be clear about the rules of the house. And this is what we do. This is what our family does.
You have to do it in Shabbos time.
Correct. But not at that time of anger. Because children will read it as anger.
Much more receptive.
100%. And they will not associate the punishment, quote unquote, with something that I need to do to fix myself to be better, they'll associate it with anger. So anger equals this, as opposed to what I did equaling this.
Mm-hmm. They can also step back, like the time when they did something or whatever, and then you wait a little while, say a day or two, and then you talk to them. Like, then it's like,
well, day or two, well, I'll be honest with you.
Also from what they did,
that's
realize,
correct.
Oh my gosh.
But
you
mean
parents?
But too much time.
Yeah, you don't want too much time. Right, you don't want too much time to pass. You don't want too much time to pass. The best way to deal with it, I mean, go tell any parent when something really horrible happens, is to say, I need you to go to your room to think about what you just did. And we're going to come back and talk in a couple of minutes. You're going to tell me what you think you did wrong. I'm going to tell you what I think you did wrong. And then we're going to talk about what needs to happen next. That gives you a little bit of time to process. It gives them time to process. And even if you're not there yet, they think that you know everything that's going on, and this is all part of it. That's really... Oh, yeah, 100%. Right.
Overnight.
Correct. I'm gonna lock you in your room, and you cannot come out, even if you want to. Right. Older children do need more time. Processes 100%. And The second thing is, just while we're on this, we don't want to give punishments that we're not going to be able to meet. You're not coming with us on vacation. That's your punishment, right? That never happens. Everybody always says it. Never works. You are not going to have dessert with everybody else. You want to bet? They're going to have dessert with everybody else. It's important to think of punishments that are easy to do, and that can be fit to the behavior. But again, I want to go back to something. Punishments in general are reactive. We're reacting to a behavior. It is much more effective to catch children doing something good than catch them doing something bad. If we focus and spend as much time looking at a child, and every time you see them doing something, like, honey, I just want to tell you, I'm so proud of what you just did. What did I do? I didn't even know what you did. You just went over and helped him. That's amazing. What you just did was terrific. They feel like $1 million, and you better believe they're going to try and help somebody next time because they're going to feel great about themselves. That's being proactive. The positive is always proactive. The negative is always reactive. It is always so much healthier for a relationship and for general training to be proactive and to catch children doing things good. And that, I think, is a very important message. Here, Hashem had to react. He had to react. He was trying, kiviyachol. Not that Kadosh Baruch Hu needs to try, but we see that Kadosh Baruch Hu was giving chance upon chance upon chance upon chance to the Jewish people. And at a certain point, there were just those outlying individuals that just didn't get the message. And at that point, when they just couldn't get it anymore, Hashem had to react. And the reaction, right, and the reaction was the Slav. And when they still didn't get it, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to react even stronger. Had to respond even stronger. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished them after the original punishment of the Slav itself. Okay, I think we're going to stop here. I want to thank everybody. Next week we're going to, please God, 10 o'clock, Wednesday? Yep, looking forward. 10. 10.